Dr. John Duffy joins us right now, clinical psychologist, our show's psychologist.
Yeah, we need him. Oh. Roll in the couch.
Now more than ever. John, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me, guys.
John, I don't know if you're aware of this, but I watch The View pretty much every day. I love The View.
You really still do?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The other day, Meghan McCain, one of the panelists on The View, said, after they all went around the table and all the women talked about how great their holiday had been, being Thanksgiving.
Sure.
She said, I got to be honest with you. She goes, I have to say this. My Thanksgiving sucked. She goes, I've had a rough year. She lost her father, Senator John McCain.
Right.
And she said, for those of you who think that the holidays are always a great time of merriment and happiness, it's not always that way. My holiday was awful, and I think that's okay to talk about that and say that. And it is, isn't it?
I think it's important to talk about that and say that instead of having this expectation, because there is this kind of like almost bipolar nature to this season where you get about two-thirds of people who are super excited and decorate every inch of their house and talk about it for weeks or months even and have family over and friends over and parties. And then there's this segment that's, I think, close to a third of our population that has either experienced a loss like Meghan McCain did in this past year or a loss around the holidays and there's this anniversary around that loss, or they lost a job, or they're just down a lot of the time. And when you're leaning toward depression in your life, the holidays amplify that in a way I can hardly describe. You know, like, so if I'm working with somebody over the course of a year who leans toward depression, the holidays, just because everybody else seems to be having such a great time, make it really difficult for people who are not.
I went out with a couple of high school friends last night, and the three of them lost their fathers within 2 weeks of one another a few months back. But this is the first Thanksgiving without their fathers.
Yeah.
And their moms have been so strong through everything except on Thanksgiving. It hit them. All the moms, like, at that point, it's like, wow, this is the first Thanksgiving without my significant other.
Yeah.
So holidays just tug on your heartstrings.
Right. Well, there's the empty chair syndrome, right? There's that idea, you know, the rest of the year you can kind of convince yourself like, oh, we can go along business as usual, and gradually we can kind of assimilate the loss. But when it comes to Thanksgiving or it comes to Christmas, it just is stark, you know? And I happen myself to have had two losses in my family around the holidays.
Yeah.
So I can relate to this directly because there's always this tinge of like, somebody actually is missing, so it feels a little funky. And I can find it in myself to, like, you know, bring the joy and, you know, and celebrate their lives. But it's been almost 20 years, you know what I mean? For somebody who lost their significant other in the past year or two or three, I think that's really, really a lot to ask.
But it's safe to tell people listening right now that that pain does go away. It's like that hole in your heart fills with goofy stories and funny memories, but it's there for a while.
Yeah, it's definitely there for a while. And what we have this tendency to do when we lose somebody is we focus on the loss, those last few days, weeks, months, and it's hard not to do that, to think about like, oh, died too young and tragically, and you forget the 20 or 40 or 60 or 80 years preceding that.
Right.
But once you can start bringing those memories back organically and telling funny stories, even if you're crying and laughing at the same time, which I notice a lot of people do.
Now you guys know what PMS is, by the way. Because when you cry and laugh at the same time, that's what women go through.
Wow, that's what that feels
yes.
like. I'm so sorry, Wendy.
PXMAS. It's a new version of PMS.
What is it?
PXMAS. It's like PMS. You know, for so many of us, did you call it empty chair syndrome? Is that how you referred to it?
Yeah.
I totally get that because Christmas Eve is always my favorite night of the year, and to look over to where my mom used to be as we were all exchanging gifts and her not being there, it would just grab you.
Oh, you know? It's just brutal, isn't it?
Yeah.
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 But to your point, Wendy, as time went on, the surprise wasn't there. You know, that first year or two or three,
it
was so new.
Yeah.
And it's always bad, but you're more accepting of it, right, as time goes on?
As time goes on, it definitely gets better. It doesn't get perfect, but it goes from being awful, like it sucks, to bittersweet, and you can find the joy in the memories, and that makes the healing process so much better than it does in the first year or two. So anybody who suffered a loss in the past year, just know that this does get better over time. It doesn't get perfect, and the loss is real, and you'll probably want to honor that. But oftentimes in my family, we honor it with a funny story, you know what I mean? Something really, really funny that happened in the last year or 20 years ago that reminds us of the person we lost.
All right, so it's easy to understand how somebody could be a little down during the holidays when they've lost somebody, but a lot of the depression, a lot of the sadness goes beyond that. For a lot of people, it doesn't have anything to do with losing anybody, does it?
No, some people just have a tendency toward anxiety, depression. Loneliness, I think, is probably the symptom I come across in December more than anything else. And and it's amplified by the fact that nobody else seems lonely. And in the age of social media, fewer people seem lonely. And so you feel very much like, wow, I really am the only one who doesn't have the plan, isn't invited to the party, doesn't have the big family event coming up. And so that loneliness kind of creates an element of hopelessness for some people.
Isn't it more perception than reality, though? You assume because social media is so important and people are connecting that way. But in reality, it's not that way.
It's definitely not that way. I think when you're in a lonely state of mind, you get this kind of almost brain fog that tells you what you're seeing in social media is reality.
Yeah.
And so what I encourage people to do in situations like that, if you know somebody who isn't just sitting in the corner of the party, but simply isn't invited to the party for whatever reason, to find those people, seek them out and reach out to them and say something, you know.
What's a perfect thing to say?
Yeah,
or close to perfect.
So I've asked people who experience this symptom, you know, like, so, you know, a lot of us feel like we are going to say the wrong thing, and what I get in the resounding answer is, say something. I don't care if you say the wrong thing. Tell me you have no idea what to say to me. I would rather hear that than have you walk away from me walking down the street or in the grocery store. But usually it would be just like you would talk to anybody else. Just like, hey, how's it going? You know, and not necessarily anything about the season or anything like that. Just a check-in, you know. Hey, I've been thinking about you. How you doing? You know? And they very clearly say, don't do this via text, don't do this via email of all things, but actually, you know, come to my door or stop me on the street, seek me out.
And there's nothing wrong with throwing a compliment. Hey, I love that shirt, is incredible.
Yes.
Where'd you get that shirt?
Yeah.
Something like that.
You say that to me and I know you're lying.
Where did you get that shirt?
I'm not wearing a shirt.
What? How can that be? But just the interaction, the key to this is the interaction, is to don't leave that person out in the cold. It's obvious that person is struggling right now and by themselves. Jump in.
But what if you don't want to invite them over? And I'm not saying that meanly, just sometimes you aren't able to do it. Maybe you're going out of town. So in a weird way, sometimes you're like, well, I'm not going to reach out because I can't do anything.
Yeah. And oftentimes, in fairness, they don't want to be invited over. They don't have the bandwidth for the party. So what they would say is, stop by, just knock on the door and say hi, or stop me on the street. You don't have to invite me to the thing. You know what I mean? Just let me know I'm on your mind, because you know, that alone grounds me. You know what I mean? I know, like, okay, somebody out there is thinking of me, so this loneliness that I perceive is not reality necessarily, right?
Yeah.
But the presumption a lot of us make is, oh, they're independent and they're strong and they're fine and this is what they want. I don't know if that's ever really the case. I think most of us want to be acknowledged. They want somebody to look us in the eye. We all want this to some extent.
Right.
Yeah.
And think about it. Every once in a while, I'll get a text from a friend I don't see very often, and it's just like, hey, was thinking about you. I passed something at the store that made me think of you. And then you have a little sparky conversation. It's like, oh, God, thanks for thinking of me. I was thinking of you. And some time can pass again, but it's nice to get those little texts and feelings of reassuring feelings. So,
especially this time of year, I think a lot of us like can need that and could really use that this time of year. Absolutely,
no doubt about it.
I'm thinking about you,
Wendy. That's a strange coincidence. There'll be more of us thinking about each other in just a little bit. And if you want to jump in, 312-981-7200, we'll get that done. It's Bill Left and it's Wendy Snyder. Our guest is Dr. John Duffy, clinical psychologist. We're talking about holiday depression. something a lot of people don't want to address, John, but it's certainly there. You said as many as 1 in 3 people suffer from this?
Yeah. The more I talk to people, the more I talk to other clinicians, it feels like that's about right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Such a high number.
It is.
Wow.
It is.
Here's an interesting text. I'm a funeral director, and I always tell my clients that the last thing the deceased would want is for them to be unhappy. They'd want you to put up lights and have a happy holiday season, not experience complicated grief. I think that's probably true, right?
Undoubtedly true. And yet, among those of us who are survivors, there's a little bit of guilt affiliated with anything that smacks of joy,
Really?
But I think the funeral director makes a really, really good point that, you know, like, having worked with families who have lost someone in the not too distant past, that person who is passing away almost always says, I want you to enjoy your lives. Yeah. I don't want this to define the rest of your lives. I want you to have fun. I want you. And if that's part of honoring my memory, fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
There was an interesting article on Huffington Post, and it was about someone who lost their father, and a friend walked up to the girl and said, I'm so sorry about your father. I lost my dad when I was 6 months old. I never knew him. And this person then says, you know, okay, you win the contest. Yeah, I had my dad for 30 years. Your story's worse. We kind of tend to, but you know what I'm saying? We try, I lost my dad when I was 10. So when I meet someone who's lost a parent, I'm like, I've been through that.
Right.
You know, you do get past it, but that person doesn't want to hear about your stories. They want to say, this is about my dad that I lost.
Yeah.
So is there a right and wrong way to do this?
It's so tricky because when you say, I lost my dad when I was 10, I can relate to what you're going through. You're not making this a contest. That is not your intent, clearly, right? But sometimes when somebody's loss is new, they feel like, oh, you're making this
about you.
You're making this your story and you're making it about you. Why don't we make this about me? So, you know, in the immediate aftermath of a loss, I think it's important to kind of focus on that person and that person's stories. That said, some people will say, I find comfort in hearing that, you know, like somebody else has been through it and has made it through it and you can make it through it. So there is no hard and fast rule here. What I hear from people more than anything else is, if you have a question about whether you can ask me something, ask me whether you can ask it. You know, be meta about
idea.
It. Say, you know, like, you know, I've got a story about my dad. I lost him when I was 10. If you want to hear it, great. If you want to talk about it another time, that's fine too. You know, because one thing about losing somebody, and I talked to a family recently who lost somebody tragically, and they said, suddenly we're supposed to be loss and grief experts. We don't know what we're supposed to do here, you know, any
That's
more than
point.
Anybody else, right? And so when people say, you know, like, should we do this? We're often like, I don't know. You know, like, I have no idea what the right thing to do is, but go ahead, you know. So don't presume that just because somebody lost somebody that they know what to do, because by and large, they do not. I mean, part of the reason we have rituals, wakes and funerals and all this, all these other trappings around it, is that nobody really knows what to do. So we create structure that allows, you know, at least some format for how to interact.
Yeah. And everybody reacts differently to it and goes through the process at different times.
You can never even tell who's going to be affected in a dramatic way, right? So you would almost think like, oh, immediate family and then close friends. And as the ripples and the circles go further out from the person who was lost, you'd think like, oh, well, you're less affected way out there on the edges. That's not always the case. I often find like if a there have been a couple of teenagers in our town who have passed away. And I often find that it's somebody who barely knew that person or didn't know that person at all who is deeply affected for one of a number of reasons. It could be like, boy, I thought about, you know, like I've been thinking about my own mortality lately, or I lost a parent, or it's just something that's on my mind that I'm afraid of. So you can't presume you know who's going to be affected and how they're going to be affected. So sometimes at a wake, the family is surprised at who seems relatively unaffected, who seems like they ought to be affected. You know, boy, the uncle's not affected, but this kid who's 9 degrees out
is
seems deeply
affected.
Yeah.
Jim is online too and wants to talk to us. Hi, Jim.
How are you?
We're good. You lost your wife?
5 years ago. And I always put a small picture of her in my cubicle. I take it out of my briefcase. And this one woman, she says, Jim, you got to get over it. It's been 5 years. You don't need to put that. And I have it there because it makes me feel better, you know. And
then that's all that matters, right?
And I looked at her like with my mouth open. I can't believe you said that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it anyone else's right to say how long or how you need to grieve, John?
There was a woman, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, about 50 years ago, who came up with these stages of grief, and they seemed linear. There were five of them. I've never, ever known a single person who went through those stages in any linear way. And Jim, to your point, if that brings you some comfort every day of your life for the rest of your life, that is your business. And that does not suggest you're not living your life or moving on. It might mean you want to keep your wife alive in your memory. You want to be able to see her image every day, and that brings you some comfort. In mild defense of your coworker, she probably comes at it from the best of intentions, right? Like, you know, oh, you're wallowing in something, and it's been over for 5 years. Oftentimes, people, yeah, go ahead.
Another woman came after and said, "I can't believe she said that."
Well, I do understand that for sure, but I do stand by what Wendy's saying. You know, it's nobody's business how you grieve or how long you grieve, and oftentimes when you lose somebody that close, grieving is a lifelong process, and we kind of as a populace, we want to be able to tie everything up in a nice neat bow. Grief doesn't work that way, and so, you know, if this is your way of working through it, coping with it, and if it brings you some degree of comfort just to have her there and have that image there, I totally get that.
Willie Nelson has a song out called "You Never Get Over It, You Live Through It." So you never get over it.
All hail King
King Willie.
Nelson.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. No, that's true, Jim. I agree.
Jim, thanks for the call.
Thank you. Right. Have a nice holiday.
Yeah. Again, I'm not defending this woman, but I'm sure in her mind it's, how can a guy like Jim get along and meet somebody else if
right.
he keeps looking at a picture of his...
None of her business.
Yeah, probably not. Probably not.
Maybe right. he never will meet someone.
Right.
Maybe he has no desire
yeah,
to.
Yeah,
true.
Everyone's
true.
Different.
Right. And it might be a better approach to talk to him about it. Ask him about it. You know, so I notice there's a picture of your wife here every day. Tell me about that.
Yeah.
You know, and Jim, somebody in Jim's position might love to tell some stories, you know, and that might really be kind of healing for him. But it is his call, how he handles that.
No question.
You know, so it's probably better to ask than to tell, right? Because
yep.
telling presumes you know better.
Yep. Dr. John Duffy's book, The Available Parent, is available wherever books are sold. You can hear him here on WGN quite often through the holiday season, especially, right? When's your next assignment?
Yeah, I will be on Friday night at 10 o'clock from 10 to 1 with Paul Farvar doing the WGN Nightside thing.
Excellent. You filled in for us. He's going to be taking our job pretty soon.
Any moment.
Interesting. Yep. You can also listen to his podcast, Better, that he co-hosts with his wife, Julie. You can find it on WGN Plus and wherever your favorite podcasts are found. Good luck to you.
Thanks so much, guys. Appreciate it. We'll take a break.
He'll be in for us tomorrow,
yeah,
it seems.
No. How about that? All right, a break and then some news and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.